Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, Beth. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Do you owe citizens an apology for being absent while their homes were burning? Do you regret cutting the fire department budget by millions of dollars, Madam Mayor? Have you nothing to say today? Have you absolutely nothing to say to the citizens today? Elon Musk says that you're utterly incompetent. Are you considering your position? Madam Mayor, have you absolutely nothing to say to the citizens today who are dealing with this disaster? No apology for them?
That's a really sad thing to hear right now. We're watching continued news coverage of the fires in Los Angeles, specifically in the Palisades. Yesterday, we talked to DeRoy Murdoch, who went to Palisades High School, now called Palisades Charter High School, burned to the ground. I was sad to tell him that on the air. He hadn't heard that yet. And there was a Fox News report had just come out about it. The press conference that took place in Los Angeles within the last hour or so, it's a pretty long one. They provided a lot of information, but I think that as sometimes these things are apt to do, the more information you provide, the more questions that you have. There are a lot of concerns about the preparedness of the city officials, statewide officials, county officials on the ability to prepare for a catastrophe like one that is unfolding right now in Los Angeles. Here is the mayor speaking on
the
crisis.
This is an active situation. And conserve water to the extent that you can. We want to make sure that we are ready if we need more water. But make no mistake, Los Angeles will rebuild stronger than ever. Right now, if you need help, emergency information, resources, and shelter is available. All of this can be found at URL.
That's the mayor. Now, the mayor was out of town. She was in Ghana for some dignitary, appointment or whatever, of an acknowledgement of something. And if you listened yesterday, you heard Harris Faulkner from Fox News on with us. And she was saying, you know, what she was doing, that's something that people in her position will do. They'll travel to acknowledge these types of events. And it's not like you would, if you're out of town and something like this happens, it's possible that the timing is just going to be very poor. So I don't so much need to pay attention to and judge every single thing that takes place right now in the midst of it, because the real work is being done not in front of cameras. It's being done in conversations that are going between departments and local government. But I think it is an important question to ask, and also to make sure that history is not in a position to repeat itself, to assess what could have been done to prevent what we are watching unfold right now. And sometimes you can have a catastrophic event that is so large that you can't really prepare for the act of God that you're watching unfold in front of your eyes. That's something that we have to remember, that the dramatic 100-mile-an-hour wind speeds that we've seen in California. Again, yesterday, Harris Faulkner was saying, you know, remember, these are hurricane force winds where you throw fire in the middle of them. And when you throw fire in the middle of hurricane force winds in completely arid landscape, you've got a big problem. However, at the same time, you know that the landscape in Southern California is prone to these types of disasters. Now, I pray for the lives of all of the people who are being affected right now by this. I pray for discernment for people who are having to make dramatically difficult decisions as to what to do next. But I also think it is very important to hold accountable the people who have failed in their jobs and their duties to make sure that the people are protected by those who represent them in government. And, you know, this is one of those really ironic times. The left and the right look at a problem and they say, we see the problem. It's right there. And really, in large part, what the left sees and what the right sees is the same problem. The solution, however, that true conservative-minded people develop compared to the solution that true progressive, liberal, big government kind of people establish when they see the same problem, they're so far away from each other. And who you decide to elect to these positions does affect the outcome. I've seen it repeatedly on X. I've seen it in comments in our YouTube live chat. Come join us there and throw your thoughts in the matter. I would love to read them. But you could see a rapid fire going wild in Los Angeles, devastating people's lives and their homes, taking everything they have from them. And you could say, gosh, this is what you have when you don't have enough government. This is what you have when you don't have enough people, enough resources at the hands of those people who are in charge to make sure that the people are protected. Now, if you're looking at California and you're saying that the governments don't have enough resources, you are taxed out of your ever-loving mind when you live in the state of California. You pay into the system dramatically when you live in the state of California, because Californians, on the whole, the majority of them believe in big, large regulatory government. If it sounds heartless to talk about something like this at a moment like this, I do understand the idea of working towards calming the crisis and then doing the assessment after the fact when people aren't still being pulled out of the rubble. But part of what is taking place right now, part of the problem, is that the resources that the taxpayers have invested in, as something as simple as clean, available water in a landscape that should be able to, Have you ever thought, gosh, I hope there's water in those fire hydrants? I honestly didn't even know that it was possible that that could not be the case. Now, being in the Midwest, I understand that the geography is different. The water situation, the water table, it's all different here than it is there. But if it's different in a way that is dangerously punitive to the citizens that live in that area, government is supposed to be there to plan accordingly. Government is supposed to serve the interests of the people who fund it, not the fish who do not fund it. In the state of California, we have seen very valiant efforts by Governor Newsom to protect the wildlife, the smelt. You know how I know what smelt is? Do you know how I know what smelt is? Because I, along with my children, have gone fishing in Animal Crossing. That's how I know what smelt is. You can fish for things. It's not exciting when you go fishing in Animal Crossing and you pull out a smelt. Ooh, whoopee-doo, big deal. I am for protecting the environment. I am for the idea that we should preserve God's creation. But I am not for preserving the smelt at the expense of the lives of human beings that live in the area and are now living in a dangerous set of circumstances because of the political grandstanding that needed to be made by Governor Newsom when he reroutes water, protects water so he can protect these shiny little silver fish. They look like bait. And he makes the lives of those Californians who elected him into that office endangered. And when you really come to think of it, one of the trademarks, one of the staples, and this goes back, folks, one of the staples of the far left progressive bat crap crazy wing of the Democratic Party is this idea that humans need to be subservient to all of land, to the earth. That's earth was the word that was a big the earth when I was growing up. That's what we were talking about. Do you remember all of that? Earth. That's what we discussed. Now it's climate, but climate means earth. It's the same thought process that the Democratic Party has prioritized over the lives and importance and relevance of human beings on this planet. Is there a better example than protecting smelt at the expense of the lives of Californians in California by Governor Newsom? And if you really think about this, folks, I'm a millennial, 40 years old, born in 1984. Do y'all remember the movie Fern Gully? Do you remember? Did you ever watch it?
Oh, yeah.
I watched it when I was a kid. I had a friend, and she was a very, very good artist, and she loved to draw the fairies mm-hmm. that were in there. And so we watched Fern Gully all the time. And all I remembered from Fern Gully was fairies. Now, my family, we enjoy Disney, and we were trying to watch a lot of classic Disney movies, probably during COVID. And I'm like, oh, Fern Gully, this is something we watched when I was a kid all the time. Let's watch Fern Gully. It's the most human-hating movie that has ever been made.
Yeah.
They're not even, like, subtle about it.
No.
It's in your face.
The it's like all they want to do is tear down the forest. They don't put out, well, maybe they need the wood for this or whatever. It's just they want to wreck the forest, and then, like, this big sludge monster comes out of their machines and feeds off all the smog, and then, you know, it's all like the whole thing is about how humans are trying to kill the forest.
Yeah, it's not even the priority message in Fern Gully is not even protect the forest. It's hate the human.
Yes.
The villain is the existence of people.
Mm-hmm.
And my entire life, I've grown up with subtle messages being put out there like that and very overt messages being put out there like that. But if you stop for a moment and think about a political ideology that is willing to invest wholly in diminishing the importance of humanity and elevating the importance of earth, dirt, soil, everything, climate. If you can reverse all of that, so much follows that can be upside down and inverted in a sensible way that you can pretty much make anything possible. You could even tell people that men are women and women are men, which would have been an absolutely bonkers, absurd assertion in the 90s when I was growing up. The worship of climate, the worship of Earth. We went through a whole recycling movement. I've been somebody who has dramatically tried to shift my support for recycling because I come from Illinois. I drive by landfills every day. When I'm driving in on 5570, the landfill is in the way of the St. Louis skyline and the beautiful St. Louis Arch. I can't see it. And that really ticks me off. I don't like that. And when I think about all of the things that I'm putting into that landfill, and I realize that I could put in less, I am okay with that because I make that decision for myself, not because somebody else shamed me into it. But now you get down the road and you find out that there are a lot of trash companies that just put the recycling and the trash together. You want to talk about virtue signaling? Your trash can with the light blue trash can top might be an example of virtue signaling. There's so many things that get put in there that they're not actually recyclable. These are all marketing campaigns, and it's more than just trying to preserve the environment. And you see it now more than ever. And thank the Lord God Almighty that Donald Trump won the last election, because Kamala Harris was a face on a movement that had gotten so big and so strong that it didn't matter who the person was. The movement was big enough that you will oblige, because if you don't, you are a terrible person. And nobody wants to be a terrible person. Nobody wants to be bad. Nobody wants to make the wrong. So you want to be a good, you know, community supporting person. Mostly just want to live on your own and not be offended every time you turn around and not really have to. You want to be independent. But you also don't want to be known as a pariah because you didn't publicly do and say the right things. When that movement becomes so big and so large that the face of the movement doesn't matter because people are too afraid to go against it, we know what that looks like. We've been living it for 4 years, and it's no bueno. Now Southern California burns, and you have to ask yourself, if you are somebody who was living in the midst of this, and everything you had was taken away, and you are making the choice right now, do I rebuild in California? Do I preserve this absolutely stunning view that God has created on the southern coast of California? Do I rebuild my life and my home in the Palisades in California, knowing that these people are in charge? Do they care about me, or do they care about the smelt? Because if I'm in that position, and I know that the philosophy for 40 plus years of the people who are in charge of California is to protect the smelt and not the taxpaying citizens, I'm out. And I say that as somebody who's clinging to the very, very end in the state of Illinois where my family is from. I think it will be very interesting to see who bends and who breaks in the rebuilding of Southern California in Los Angeles, because something is going to have to give for these people to say, yeah, I will continue to make my home here. When we come back, Hans von Spakovsky is going to be with us. I'm looking forward to having a conversation with him. We're just 11 days away from Donald Trump taking office, and we've got a sentencing for Donald Trump tomorrow. Big day, Donald Trump. Don't worry. You're just like a week and a half away from being the president again. It'll be fine. Hans von Spakovsky on the Annie Fry Show next. Don't go away.
You might think financial crime is all about money, but sometimes it ends in murder. I'm Nicole Lappin, host of Money Crimes, a Crime House original podcast. Each episode features a thrilling story about the dark side of finance and how to protect yourself from it. Follow and listen to Money Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What is the
purpose of this? Is he going to jail? Is he going to jail? You're going to get a fine. We got to sit up there and go through all the pomp and circumstance when you know you're not going to do anything. He was certified as the next president of the United States of America. Come January 21st, he will be sworn in as the 47th president of the United States of America.
We the people of the United States.
More perfect.
Pure form of our perfect union.
Heritage legal expert Hans von Spakovsky.
Well, Hans, happy new year. Great to have you back on the show. Good to talk to you once again.
Well, thanks for having me.
That was Stephen A. Smith. He's pretty worked up about the sentencing for Donald Trump that's going to take place tomorrow. You've been all over this with us for the course of the lawfare that Donald Trump has been facing. You've written a piece on the Daily Signal about Fonnie Willis. Her name just keeps creeping back into the story, just like she likes it, I think. Well, tell me about Donald Trump's the sphere of legal troubles that he's had, but also legal victories. And what's Fonnie Willis doing in Fulton County once again?
Well, you know, we have a sentencing tomorrow. This is the case, unfortunately, presided over by Judge Merchan, who's probably one of the most politically biased judges in the country. And the judge recently basically refused to acknowledge or admit that the presidential immunity case, which was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court 9-0, had any bearing on the case before him at all, which is just one of a long series of mistakes that Merchan has made and which will be an issue. Whatever Merchan says tomorrow, that'll be an issue in the appeal that is filed by Donald Trump. The Georgia case filed by Fannie Willis, I mean, it's in its last legs. The most important thing that happened was back in December, the Court of Appeals of the state of Georgia removed Fannie Willis from the case, her and her entire office, and said, basically, you're not allowed to handle this case because of the conflicts of interest by your misbehavior. So what happens in that situation in Georgia is the Georgia state government has this thing called a prosecuting attorney's council. And the case is now with them. And they will decide whether or not this prosecution of Trump and all the other defendants should be transferred to a different county DA's office so they can continue the prosecution, or whether the case should just be thrown out and dismissed. No telling how long that will take. If I was a betting man, I would bet that they are just going to toss it out in its entirety. But the biggest thing that just happened to Fannie Willis was that she and her office just got hit with a $22,000 judgment. They're going to have to pay that amount in attorney's fees and costs to Judicial Watch. Why? Well, Georgia has an open records law. It makes most government documents public records. And Judicial Watch went to her 2 years ago and said, we want all communications that you, Fannie Willis, and your office have had with Special Counsel Jack Smith and the J6 Committee. And Fannie Willis kept saying, oh, we don't have any documents. Oh, we don't have any documents. That was clearly not true. Judicial Watch filed a lawsuit. And the end result of all of this is, according to the judge's order, is they never actually looked to see whether they had any documents. They just automatically said, no, we don't have anything. And they finally, when the judge ordered them this past December, you have got to do a search. They came back and they said, well, we don't have any communications with Smith, the special counsel, but we do have communications with the January 6th committee, but they're all privileged and we're not going to turn them over. So the judge said, you violated the Georgia Open Records Act. You are going to pay all of Judicial Watch's attorney's fees that they've had to incur in order to get you to finally comply with the law. So they're going to have to pay that over, and now there's going to be a fight over whether the documents, whatever they are they really exempt under the law, or is she once again just raising a frivolous exemption to avoid politically embarrassing documents from surfacing?
Man. Hans von Spakovsky with us, a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. I mean, that has been put a tent on the circus territory in Fulton County, Georgia, for quite some time, pretty much the entirety of this lawfare. You said that it's going to go into the hands of what did you call it, that where the case is going to...
Yeah, it's a prosecuting attorney's counsel. It's this state agency that represents all of the DAs throughout Georgia. They will decide whether the case continues or whether it should just be thrown out. If you want an example of what they've done, folks may remember that also 2 years ago, Fannie Willis was targeting, as part of her grand jury investigation, she was targeting a state senator for supposed participation in what, you know, Trump was doing to contest the election results. He was running for lieutenant governor at the time. And a judge 2 years ago disqualified her from being able to target this guy, Burt Jones, with her grand jury. Why? Because at the very same time she was targeting him with her grand jury investigation, she was helping his Democratic opponent raise money to oppose him in the lieutenant governor's race. After she was disqualified, same thing happened. It went to this prosecuting attorney's counsel, and just a couple of months ago, they threw out the case.
It's very dirty. It looks very, it seems like everybody else could see it from the outside looking in. You, Hans, certainly have been reflecting on this, being very well-versed in Georgia law, but there is a period of time, and God, I'm hopeful that period of time is over, where everything continued to go. You're like, well, obviously this should go, you know, A, and then of course we get to the result and it goes B. I think the sentencing that's taking place tomorrow is another one of those instances where it's like Judge Mershon has come out and said regarding this trial in Manhattan, I'm not going to sentence him to jail. It's just going to be like the period on the end of the sentence to make sure that he's a convicted felon, I guess, before he becomes the president of the United States. Is there justice left for Donald Trump, specifically in the Mershon situation in New York? Is there still a way that he could seek out and find justice even in this system in New York?
Well, yes, if the courts of appeal there overturn what Merchant has done. And quite frankly, I don't understand why Merchant is still a judge. You know, he violated the judicial ethics rules of the state when he actually made a contribution to Joe Biden's campaign, which you are not allowed to do as a judge. And yet there's been no action other than a letter of criticism from the state against him. He ought to be removed as a judge by the state legislature. He should not be presiding. He should not be a judge in the judiciary there. But the place where justice may occur, hopefully, is in the Court of Appeals, and what they need to do is throw out the entire case against Donald Trump.
So Donald Trump is found guilty. I think it was, 34 counts of the same thing that isn't even legitimate. You know, it's so ridiculous, right, how we got to this point. He's found guilty on these charges. As of tomorrow when he's sentenced, he will be a convicted felon on these felonies that he's been charged with. Then it goes to the appeal process. Do you expect the appeal system to work to expedite this process? Are they going to draw it out forever? I mean, he'll be the president of the United States while this is unfolding.
You know, my problem is I don't trust the New York judicial system. There are too many politically biased judges in the system there who are very similar to Judge Merchant. And I'm optimistic. I hope that the Court of Appeals does the right thing and wraps this up quickly. But But I just can't be sure that that's going to happen. They very well may try to drag this out so that this false label of him being a felon lasts for as long as possible. I just don't trust the New York judicial system.
The sentencing that will take place tomorrow, I don't know if you have an anticipation of what that sentencing will actually look like, but if at all, will that affect his ability to be the president of the United States?
No.
In no way.
No, it won't in any way affect it. It's simply a continuation of the publicity battle waged by the left. The same way, that's what Fannie Willis was trying to do down in Georgia. She wanted Donald Trump labeled as a felon. She was hoping she could get a conviction, perhaps criminal time, to interfere with his ability to run for office. As you know, all of that has fallen apart. The federal cases have been basically the one in D.C. has been dismissed by Jack Smith. The one down in Florida is on appeal to the 11th Circuit over the fact that the judge said to Jack Smith, you couldn't have brought this case to begin with because you were illegally appointed. And just this week, that judge, by the way, in Florida, issued a stay telling Jack Smith that, no, he could not release a final report publicly on his supposed findings in the case, because that's Jack Smith's last throw of the dart. He wants to issue a report in which he can make all kinds of claims against Trump, Donald Trump, and people who work for him. And remember, when they issue a report like that, if you're the target of it, you have no ability to contest it.
Is there anything that President Trump, once he's inaugurated, can do to rectify what's been done to him that would be appropriate?
Well, I think what needs to happen is when the new attorney general comes in, who, as you know, is Pam Bondi, former AG of Florida, has been nominated for that. She needs to come in and, frankly, clean up and reform the Justice Department. I frankly would fire just about everybody who was involved in the prosecution of Donald Trump in Florida and in D.C. Those cases were meritless, frivolous cases. They were an abuse of the law enforcement authority, and the lawyers who were involved in that, those kind of lawyers should not be working for the U.S. Justice Department.
Well, I am looking forward to when he takes the oath of office and gets in there and gets down to business, and to watch what ends up happening with our Department of Justice, with your advice and your reaction along the way, Hans. Thank you for being here with us. Happy New Year. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Take care. Bye-bye. Hans von Spakovsky, our dear friend, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, a former FEC commissioner and DOJ lawyer. Good to talk to him. In the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to speak with Congressman Mike Bost. We're going to connect with him about what he expects out of this very slim majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives. How is business being done? He's been there for a while now. So I think he came in maybe 2016, and he's seen a few things, and he knows a few things. And I'll be interested to see how he feels, if he's still kind of, you know, got a little extra pep in his step now that the new Congress has been sworn in and the president will be changing here in a few short 11 days. Congressman Boss at 125, Tyrus at 105, and Ethan in for Wiggins America next. Don't go away.
Wiggins! Oh! Wiggins!
Brian Wiggins will be back tomorrow. But he until will? Then, Ethan continues to try to take his job.
You know, he comes back on the best day for the Wiggins America segment.
Friday.
I don't think that this is fair.
Be or not the bee?
Yeah, that's
I'm
my
favorite.
I'm going
to be honest, though. I think the be or not the bee is the most work for any of the Wiggins America segments.
Maybe for him, but not for me.
No.
Because I'm just trying to figure out, what am I going to talk about for 10 minutes?
Talk about sports. Who cares what people
say? Yeah. Well, I actually found something today, guys, that is not sports related. So because of that, I have to start with a separate sports
thing. Talking to you, Susie.
Hey.
I don't know who Susie is.
Big game tonight for the Irish.
Yes. I thought you were going to talk about the Lady Wraiths, because the big game that I'm going to be at 6:30 p.m. is the 7th grade girls basketball.
Hey-o. They going to win?
They better.
They bet. Oh,
I hope so. I don't know.
Pretty intense.
We're playing a team, Lutheran School girls basketball, folks. We're playing a team. I like everybody on the other team. I don't like them enough to want to lose to them. But the person who's like my basketball coach in high school, coaches or assistant coaches. I don't know what his position is. The team will play.
Oh, so this is big. This is like,
this is not big.
This is like Jedi against Padawan. This
Which
is
one
like.
Am I?
You're the Padawan.
Okay. Cause obviously.
Because the other one was the coach. You know, you're just not Star Wars person, are you?
No.
Okay.
First, I was the learner. Now I am the master.
Yeah, that's basically
what
it is.
Yeah, I'm going to walk up to him and say that tonight.
If you win, you happening. Just have to be like, and like post-game handshake, just like, sucker!
No. No, it's going to be a 6:30 tip-off, and it was supposed to be Wednesday. The game was supposed to be Wednesday, but some of the schools in the tournament that we're in, it's our tournament, some of the schools that were in the tournament had snow day, so they couldn't play. So they rescheduled it to the start time of the Notre Dame playoff game.
That sucks.
For my husband, for sure.
It is the biggest game, arguably, in
the school's history.
Yeah. I mean, that's hard. That's tough to say. I'd
say
recent history. They're probably the most historic college football program of all time.
Can I ask a question about this topic before we get into Wiggins America?
Sure.
Because I said this to my husband last night. If you follow me on X, you know that we often watch these games on delay. We're busy. We got things to do. But he DVRs the game. We sit down. He watches the game, fast forwards to the commercials. So I can't sit there and watch that replay of a game without knowing what the score is. I will be checking the score during the basketball game.
No, you cheated last time, too. You did the same thing because you were texting me during it, because I was working Mark Reardon's show.
I don't call it cheating.
You were asking me about the Sugar Bowl.
I was. I was watching it on Google Scores, and I'm like, what happened? They had the ball, and then we scored? Well, it was takeaway.
It was a bad game.
The question is, and I asked my husband this yesterday, because he knows that I will look at the score, and I'm good at secrets. I can keep stuff to myself. Okay. Don't need my face to show anything. He doesn't ask me questions. I don't play and screw around with him. I respect it.
Sure.
But I also want to know what's going to happen. If information exists, I want to have it. I said to him yesterday, we were watching my son's freshman basketball game at Civic Memorial.
Hey-o. Go Eagles.
Nope. We lost by two. I said, so tomorrow night, while the game's going on, if Notre Dame loses in the most dramatic, heartbreaking fashion that could ever be imagined, and I know that happens, do you want me to tell you so you don't have to go through that? He goes, no. I mean, without even thinking about it.
It's a loving and kind thought from a loving wife, but he's a guy.
Yeah, I'm like, worse than the Bush push. The worst thing you can possibly think of, losing this playoff game. Can I take that pain away from you? And he was like, you cannot. So
it's just part of being a sports fan.
I'm locked in. I will know, and I will be straight-faced.
And the reason that it is such a big game for the Irish specifically is that the thing kind of with Notre Dame here in the recent, I would say, 15 years probably, at least that I can
overrated.
Remember, is
big
not
game.
Even that.
Big game
they just
players.
Have never been able to step up in the big moment.
No.
Because
they don't step up. It's a catastrophic failure.
Well, it's because there is a little bit of perhaps that you could make an argument that there is some overrated because they do tend to have a good record but a weak schedule, and then all of a sudden you have to play one of the best teams in the country, and things haven't always gone well. But this is a weaker field this year, and Penn State is a very winnable game. We can, if they make it to the championship, that's a different story, depending on who they face. But this is most definitely a winnable game for them.
I put my faith in God and my hope in Marcus Freeman.
There it is.
This is the Wiggins America that is not about sports.
Yeah, right. I know, right? Funny how that works.
I did it. It's my fault. You send those emails to me.
You broke me. Okay, so now we will make the switch. So I'll start with this. Annie, a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do any of your children own cell phones?
Well, I would say I own them. My children. the phones.
Do they possess cell phones?
Yes. My older two have phones. They do not, they are not theirs.
Sure.
So they have them when they go on their own. As soon as they come in the door, the phones go on the chargers or on the shelf. They do not get to sit and be on their phones. Zero social media. My son's 15 now, so mm-hmm. I'm a little more relaxed with that. But everything he does at school is digital. His basketball team's on GroupMe. That's how they talk. He has to have a way to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter, I trust. She hasn't broken that trust, but she also doesn't need to sit on it. She's not on social media. Everybody else is on Snapchat. She doesn't even ask.
So they have a phone for its initial purpose, which
communication.
Is communication. Yes.
With
okay.
their parents. That's the purpose. And purpose gets broken, that phone's gone.
So they're not really to the point yet, you would say, where you're able to tell if they have like issues talking to other people on the phone.
Oh, no. They have big problems.
Oh, do they?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that feeds into this perfectly.
Terrible.
So I found...
I'm like, you have to say hi. They don't pick up the phone. Can I have a ride?
Well,
can't do that.
Let me say this. They're not alone. It's
We're
not
screwed.
Just them. We may be screwed. This might be true.
My kids
but they are
nice,
not alone.
Polite kids, too. You know my
oh,
kids.
Yeah,
like
sure.
They have a... We prioritize manners, but they haven't done phone enough for it to come naturally.
So... this is across the pond over in England where this is starting, but it would not surprise me if this quickly makes its way to schools in America. There's a college in England that is offering classes on how to make phone calls. And I thought this was
When you say classes, what does that mean? Like in school?
Yeah.
At a college?
At a college, yeah. Oh, there is a class being made available to these students on how to take phone calls. This is Nottingham College in England. And what
man,
they are,
if the English can't get it right, we're toast.
What they are specifically focusing on within this class is phone etiquette and phone confidence. There was a poll last year that found that 70% of people under 35 prefer texting, and 23% said that they never answer the phone.
I'd put myself in that category.
Really?
I don't want to talk to you on the phone. Anybody. Not you, just specifically you. Phone conversations give me anxiety.
Why?
I just don't like it. Texting
is easier. What's the reason behind it? Has it just gotten to the point where like texting is just like easier and more comfortable and
you're just
so
really
you don't
on the
do
spot.
It? Okay.
It's not a good thing. I don't advocate for it, but it's true.
I will do it. Well, that's the thing is this isn't just with younger people. It is just I think that because of where technology is now, this is just spreading to like the more people that are getting consumed within technology, you mm-hmm. know, and that can be a lot of different age groups. In this website, they asked a couple of different people questions, and this lady. Miss Baxter, they say, is 53, and she talks about having phone anxiety. So it's not just with younger generations, but it is, I would say, definitely much more prevalent within younger generations. And that's crazy. 23% said that they never answer their phone. One student talked about how phone calls are hard. Because you have to talk off the cuff, which kind of goes into what you just said.
I don't have a problem with that.
And that texting is just easier. But like you said, this has become a thing where people don't even know how to make phone calls. So it's kind of one of those funny things of recognizing, yes, there is a generation where it's to the point where, yeah, we don't really know how to do that and aren't being taught that, I guess. I would say that that's something that would go into parenting, probably.
Don't you think, though? I mean, yes, you have to parent. Well, my kids, especially if they're calling, for instance, my son might need a ride home from school or something. I encourage him to call and ask for that ride, and he's fine to do it. But initially, he would call, and they'd answer the phone and be like, can I have a ride home? It's like, who are you? Say hi to the people. Lighten your voice a little bit. I mean, because it would sound
probably the assumption of caller ID, right?
Probably
is giving that.
But you can't, you got to, I mean, you have
no,
to
you're
say
right.
That.
There is a normal way to speak to people, and that's not it.
Wouldn't, I mean, when I think about kids learning how to do geometry proofs in school, I mean, our life skills education might need to be updated to the 2025 version of life, where things that you don't really have to do as a kid, which used to be balance a checkbook. You don't have to balance your checkbook, right? Every time my debit card gets billed, I get a notification on my phone. So I can check things if I think that there's something up there. But like talking on the phone, if you're going to probably be successful in business, you're going to want to know how to talk on the phone.
Absolutely.
These are things that I think that if you had a life skills course that was a semester long, it's like driver's ed. We teach people how to drive. Charlie's in driver's ed for a semester. Marry the other semester with life skills and start with polite conversation.
But doesn't it feel...
A handshake.
It just feels so weird to the point where it's gotten... Like, we've talked about this before. We definitely have talked about, like, younger generations' inability to talk on the phone. But there's just something about it jumping to the point where now, at least somewhere in the world, it is being offered as an educational course. That is just a hard level of reality that we're hitting.
I have had to, over the course of my parenting career, look at my kids and, like, you want to facepalm so hard because you're like, why do I have to explain this in such plain speak for you to understand? But the truth of the matter is, if they truly don't know, if it's not a case of them not listening, because then the problem is that they're not listening. If they truly don't know or understand something, you just have to teach them. And just because you think that they should know it, if they don't know it and you love your kid, you teach them.
So another number from this survey says that more than half of the people that were surveyed, which was over 2,000 people, say that when they receive a call, it's out of bad news. And a couple of the things that they are working on specifically in this class, they are having attendees of the class call restaurants to ask what time they open, or shops to ask them if a certain item was in stock, to test their boundaries in bite-sized ways to see how deep this anxiety level is.
That's interesting. That touches on something too, though. I feel like anymore, if someone calls you, they want something from you. You're going to be asked to do something. It's people don't call to just be like, you're great.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
For
it's
sure.
Like, I need something. And you never know how big the need is. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's fair.
So maybe there's an aversion to that.
There's definitely a level of like, okay, who's calling me, like, should be the reason as to what's bringing the nerves.
Interesting. Calling classes. That's interesting. Tyrus and Congressman Mike Bost in the 1 o'clock hour.
Get more at 971talk.com.